So for our study of Bishara, I prepared four different mini topics, and I'm hoping we'll get to cover all of them. We'll see how the time allotment. So the first topic that I want to cover with you, which you'll see on page 2, is the pasuk Vayavo Bnei Yisrael B'toch Hayom Vayabosha. And what I want to look at, and you'll see this in the middle of your page 2, is a number of different midrashim that seem to tell us something about the nature of the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf, which is so central here to Parshas Vishalach. We're going to start with the Medrash Tanchuma, which you'll see on the top of your page. The Tanchuma says that the Ata Harem Es Matecha, Hashem tells Moshe to lift up his staff. Asora Nisim Nasu Lehem Alayom. There were 10 different miracles that transpired at the Yamsuf. And he starts listing the miracles. It wasn't just that the water split. It was also that the water created some sort of a dome over their heads. And then it says on this list in the Tanchuma, Nechlak, the water split, Liyud Beis Shvilin. Don't worry, John. There's a page here if you want. It split into 12 different pathways. And obviously the number 12 corresponds to the number of Shvatim. So there was in a sense a dry road for each one of the Shvatim. The Asu Chomos Miyam, and the water themselves created some sort of walls, Bein Shvil to Shvil, separating one alleyway from another. The water, of course, is transparent, so each one of the Shvatim could see through this so-called wall and see how the other Shevet was doing. Shenemar, and at the end, the Tanchuma quotes a pasuk, Biyom Darchecha V'Shvilcha B'mayim Rabim, that the water split in such a way that there were many Shvilim, there were many roads or many pathways. So that's what goes on at Yamsuf. If you take a look in Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, we're on page 2, Joel. You have that?
Yeah.
Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Sha'omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yikavu HaMayim Bo Bayom Nikfu HaMayim V'nasu 12 Chalokim K'neged 12 Shvatim. Once again, another source in Chazal that the water split into 12 different pathways, and in each case the water went up and formed a choma from one shvil to the other, but it wasn't a barrier that prevented those who were going down one road to see what was going on with those who were on another pathway. And we can even take this back as far as the Bereishis Rabba is concerned. In Parshas Vayeshev, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish says, "Lechu re'u mifalos Elokim." This is a pasuk in which David HaMelech is nispoil. He says it's absolutely amazing. Uksiv basrei, and it says afterwards, "Hafach yom liabosha."
Excuse me, brother.
Yeah.
If we leave the door open, there'll be more heat, but it'll be a little bit more noise. Which would you prefer? Whichever you want.
I'm inclined to want to close the door. I don't know. Just my own mishigas.
Just one thing.
Yeah. He says, "Hafach yam liabosha." So David HaMelech sort of screams out and declares with great enthusiasm, excitement, take a look at what's going on over here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is splitting the water into 12 pathways. Lama, and why? Vayisne'u oso. Now, you know that Parshas Vayeshev is the Parsha of Mechiras Yosef, right? So what does it mean, Vayisne'u oso? What do you think that refers to in Parshas Vayeshev?
They hated him.
Right, exactly. Bishvil, and why? Now this is very fascinating. Sheyikra hayom lifneim pasim pasim. So that the waters would be split in front of him. We have to figure out who the him is, the pronoun him is referring to, into 12 pathways. So who's the him over here? Any guess?
Must be Yosef.
Yosef, exactly. Because if you remember, Yosef was the one who ran away from Eshes Potiphar. David, do you want to copy this? And as a result, Chazal say the reward that was bestowed upon his descendants was Vayar Hayom Vayonas. Just like he ran out, if you remember, so the Yam is going to run away, so to speak, from the people of Israel when they walk in. And basically, if you notice, there are two things that are happening here. One thing that's happening is that the waters are going to split, and that's because of Yosef. That's in the merit of Yosef. But at the same time, the waters are going to split into 12 different pathways. And why? Because of the 12 Shvatim who gathered together to attack Yosef. Vayisnu Oso. And notice that this Medrash is talking about the wonders of Kriyas Yamsuf. There's no finger of accusation that's being pointed here to the brothers, to the Shvatim, for having attacked Yosef. And it seems that what's going on over here is that the whole parsha of Mechiras Yosef now becomes a background for Kriyas Yamsuf. We know that there are 12 Shvatim. And we also know that each Shevet, although it has its own, you know, its own, I don't know, if you give that away, I won't be, I just need one copy for myself. Sorry. We need to understand that on the one hand, each Shevet has its own personality, its own character. In fact, the Pasuk tells us in Tanakh, in Shmuel, that we are Goyim, we are Amim, we are considered many nations, we are 12 different nations. And yet, the Pasuk also says, Goy Echad Ba'aretz, we are one nation. So in other words, we're one nation that really is a conglomerate of 12 different peoples. And each one of those mini nations that make up Klal Yisrael, each one of those colonies, or whatever you might call it, has its own personality. You know, I'm thinking, for example, in the United States, we have 50 states. Each state has its own rights. And then they form one nation, the federal entity, which is called the United States of America. Here also, we have 12 Shvatim. Each Shevet is called a Goy or an Am, a nation unto itself, with its own character, its own personality, its own contribution, and yet at the same time it's Goy Echad Ba'aretz, or one nation united that's made up of these 12 different categories. So Yosef in a sense represents the nation as a whole, and Bizchus Yosef, the Yam is going to split. But because of the 12 different personalities of the various Shvatim, respectively, the various brothers, there will be a nation that's made up of 12 different sub-nations or colonies. And that's why at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, Chazal tell us that the water split into 12 pathways. And each Shevet went down its pathway, but yet the water was transparent, the Choma, you can see from one side to the other, so that there's a unity here because each Shevet is looking to see how the other Shevet is faring, how the other Shevet is managing.
How
How far was it when it was crossed? How far was it?
I don't know. I don't have the dimensions here. None of the Midrashim and the Chazal give details about how it worked logistically. Okay, I want to go on to topic number two, and that's the pasuk Vayavo Bnei Yisrael B'toch Hayom Vayabosha V'Hamayim Lahem Choma Miminom Umismolam. Now, who actually went into the Yam? So we have various notions, but I want to tell you what the Yalkut Shimoni says. This may be new to you. It was new to me. Rabbi Meir Omer, Kisha Amdu Shvatim Al Hayom, when the 12 Shvatim arrived at the Yam, each one declared, Ani Ered. I want to be the first one to go down. Ze Omer Ani Ered. Ze Omer Ani Ered. And then while they're, debating, so to speak, who will go first, Kafat Shevet Binyamin. It was Shevet Binyamin that went down into the Yam. They were the first. And then Shevet Yehuda was upset about that because they felt that it was their rights to be the first to go down into the Yam. And the Medrash goes on to describe what took place at this time. And because of the zealousness and the desire of both Binyamin and Yehuda to go down into the Yam, each one of these two Shvatim was granted a great reward. The reward of Shevet Binyamin is that the Beis HaMikdash would be in his Chelko. Zocha Shashar Sashchina B'Chelko Shev Binyamin. And Yehuda was Zocha Tamalchus. Each Shevet wanted to fulfill the will of God. Each Shevet realized that this was a glorious moment, a crossroads in the history of Klal Yisrael, and saw itself as leading the pack. At the end, Binyamin jumped in first. Yehuda then decided that they're going to take over. And each one, Yehuda and Binyamin, were respectively rewarded for their zealousness and their intense desire to be the ones to fulfill Hashem's ratzon and go into the Yam.
It's Nachshon ben Aminadav.
Of Shevet Yehuda, right. Because that's when Yehuda took over in this whole description here in this Yalkut Shimoni. Okay, I want to go on to number three. We'll call it Roman numeral number three. The pasuk says, "Vayirdufu Mitzrayim, vayavo achrehem, kol sus paro." The word sus, as Rashi notes, is in the grammatical singular. Kol sus paro. Says Rashi, "V'chisus echad hayo." Is there only one horse? Why is it called sus? It should have said susim in the plural. Ella says Rashi, Magid she'ein kulam chashuv l'fnei hamakom ela kisus echad. All the great hordes of ponies, stallions, that came from the Mitzrim are only considered in the mind, in the eyes of God, to be one sus.
Why does it mean?
Yeah,
every?
I'm just going to close this door. Yeah, go ahead, George.
Why does it call every horse?
Usually when we refer to plural, we would say kol asusim shel paro, all the many horses of paro. But kol sus, Rashi says, means that it's all one sus. It's considered and it's significant only as one sus. Now I think that perhaps this Rashi should be understood in a broader context. We know that one of the central ideas in Judaism is Hashgacha Pratit, that God supervises over every single individual. The Gemara tells us in Chulin, Ein Adam Nokef Etzbo Milamata Elmke Machrizin Olav Milamala. Even if a person stubs his toe, it's because of a declaration of Hashem up in Shamayim. That's how intense and personal and individual is the Hashgacha Pratit, is the divine providence. And the Gemara Chulin, Rabbi Chanina, quotes Psukim, the Adam Mayovin Darko, that Hashem understands the derech of each individual. So whatever happens to me is a result of divine providence. And especially at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, we see divine providence on an individual level. How is that so? After all, the Mitzvah are going down the Yam. They're going down to the bottom of this of the Nile, correct? The Sea of Reeds? Is that how you call it in English? Yam Suf. And yet, even though the Mitzrim as a nation are being destroyed in this watery death, there is Hashgacha Pratis, even for the Mitzrim. How do you see that? Anybody know what I have in mind? I'm sort of testing
you. How quickly they die.
Exactly, beautiful, David. It says over here, Tahomos Yechasyumu Yardu Bimtsolos Kimo Oven.
They sank
like a heavy rock, a heavy stone. And yet, B'makom Acher, later on, it says in the Pasuk, Tsololu Ke'oferes. Oferes is lead. U'B'makom Acher Yochlemo Kakash. They went down like straw. Says Rashi, Harishoyim, the most evil of all the Mitzrim, Kikash, Holchim, Mitarfim, Violim, Viordim. You know, if you put a straw in water, it goes up and it goes down. It's a whole, you know, it's not a pleasant experience. Beinonim, those who are Nishtaher, Nishtaher, they're not so bad and not so good. Ke'evim, you know, they went down pretty fast, but not so fast. And Aksherim, the best of the Mitzrim, went down Ko'feres. Shenachu Miad, you know, like a lead, something that's very heavy, goes all the way down to the bottom immediately. So they died instantaneously. So perhaps if we see this entire picture as one, and what goes on, and what's revealed at Yam Suf is Hashkacha Pratit, perhaps we can swing back to the Rashi about Sus, that is one horse. And within the, shall we say, the philosophy of Hashkacha Pratit, there are two different categories. There's humans and there are animals. And the fundamental difference is that whereas Hashkacha Pratit, in the case of humans, God's involvement is personal, is individual, and every single human being is significant unto himself, even the Rishayim. And the punishment that's going to be meted out for these evildoers is meticulously weighed by Hashem, and it's appropriate for that individual. With regard to animals, the Hashgacha is different. The Hashgacha on the animal is on the entire species of the animal, on the entire group, but not on each individual. And maybe that's what Rashi means when he emphasizes that Sus is Einam Chashuvu Fe'amakam Elikisus Echad. But now, Rabos, I want to go on to topic number 4, and that is Shiras Hayam, the Shir itself. Oz Yashir Moshe Vnei Yisrael Sashira Zos Lashem Vayomru Lemar. And I want to present to you an essay, at least the highlights of an essay by the Sam Derech, I mentioned it many times, in which he outlines three dimensions to the Shiras Hayam. The first dimension, he says, is the following. If you take a look at the beginning of the Shira, the emphasis here is on what you and I might call natural events. It says, Amar Oyev Erdof Asiga Chalek Shalom. And it says, Bashir Lashem Ki Ga'oga Sus V'roch Bo Rama Vayam. So we're talking about the horses and the chariots going down into the sea. And then it says, Markavos Paro V'chelo Yorav Hayom Mirchav Shalishav Mivchar Shalishav Tubu V'yam Suf Tahomos Yechais Yumu Yordu Tzolz Kmo Oven. This is the first section of the Shira, and it represents the first dimension of what the Shira is all about. And Klal Yisrael are looking out at what we call Pil'ei Pla'im, unbelievable things that are happening here. The Yam is split, and yet there's no mention here at the beginning of the Shira of the fact that the Yam is split. It's almost like a given. Even before they sing the song, the Sea of Reeds has split. And what are they going to sing about? They're going to sing about the fact that the Sus V'roch Bo Rama V'yam, right, the horses are going down to the bottom of the sea. Mivchar Shalishav Tub V'yam Suf Yechasyu V'yardim V'tzolz K'mo Ofen Tomas Yechasyu. Basically, they are describing, in a sense, the natural events that are taking place. Because what happened? The Mitzrayim went into the Yam when it was split, and now the Yam came together and, what should we say, inundated them, flooded them. What is this dimension of the Shira? Says the Samderech, Rav Broida, Hashir Sheparatz Miklal Yisrael, the song, the outburst of song that came spontaneous from Klal Yisrael, was Dafka al Tofaot Tiviot, on natural phenomena. Sus Baruch Ramayam, Ibn Hashlu says, we saw in all the Psukim. He says, Lechora, he says, why is that worthy of Shira? What is the song over here? When Kol Advar Malolu Haim Dafka Tiviim, they're all natural. Meaning, given the fact that the waters now fall onto the Mitzrayim, then of course the Susim are going to go down, and the chariots are going to go down, and the Markvos Pariyovel Yom, and so forth and so on. He says the following. Listen carefully. B'nei Yisrael Hisromu, the people of Israel were uplifted, they were inspired, Lidarga, to a level of greatness of Gadlut, Shal Hakara Ubehirut Sichlit Gavah Kol Kach, they had such a clarity of vision, of understanding, Shehateva Atzmo, even nature itself, Nigla Lifneim, Behod, was revealed to, in front of them with this majestic beauty. Ubiteva Atzmo Ro Gadlus Hashem, that they could see the greatness of Hashem even in nature. Vashkachato Pratit Vidino Umishpato, and God is meeting out punishment with His divine providence to each one of the Mitzrayim. And this is a certain clarity in which the distinction between the supernatural events that undermine the laws of nature and the natural events, that distinction is completely broken down. Hakol, everything that happens, Nasa Kefi Ritzon HaBore, is a reflection of the will of the Creator. Mishum Kach, Lo piritu v'shiras kol anisim v'niflo sheroei nehem b'shas kriyas hayam. They omitted, at least at this point in the Shira, we'll see the other two dimensions of the Shira, they omitted any mention of the great undermining of the laws of nature, what we call nisim v'niflo, the supernatural events. That element is completely subdued, if you will. Why? Because what they saw was Sus Verocha Ravayam. This is the greatness of the Jewish people at that moment in time. They saw the Ga'o Sus Verocha, right? What does it say? It says, Ashiru Hashem Ki Ga'o Ga'a. They saw the great glory of Hashem in nature, in the fact that the Mitzrayim are going down. So again, just to summarize, the first dimension of Kriyas Yamsuf, in this understanding, in this analysis, is dafka to find God in nature. And all the psukim at the beginning of the Shira describe the natural events that took place after the waters split and were combined together to fall onto the Mitzvah. Then we go on to element number two. At this point, Klal Yisrael focuses on the plan, if you will, the scheme, the desire of our enemies. Amar Oyev, our enemies declared, Erdof, I will run after, I will pursue the Jewish people, Asig, I will take, right, I will catch up to them. What do you say?
Overtake
them. Achalek Shalal, and then I'll take the booty, because keep in mind, the Jewish people are now removed from Egypt, the vessels of silver, vessel of gold, Achalek will divvy it all. So what I'd like to do is read to you the comment of the Ramban in his Perush al Torah on this pasuk. First he starts with Rashi. Ra'isi b'medrash chazisa, there's a medrash which is called chazisa, it's a medrash on Shir HaShirim, it's a medrash also on Koheles, because it begins with a pasuk in Mishlei that says Chazisa Ish Mahir Bimalachta. I see a man with alacrity in his work. What does it say in this Medrash? Rashi quotes the Medrash. Tani Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yishmael taught us Amar Oyev Erdof Asig. This pasuk that the enemy declared, "I will pursue, I will overtake," etc. Hayoroi Leos Betchilas Hashira. In chronological order, we're relating back to what happened then, when the Mitzvim decided that they regretted their decision to let the people go, and they declared, "I will pursue, I will overtake." The Lama Lo Nichtav. Why wasn't it written at the beginning of the Shira to follow a chronological order? Says Rashi, in the name of this Medrash, Ella She'ein Muktam Umeuchar Batorah. There's no meticulous chronological sequence in the way the psukim of the Torah are organized. And then the Ramban says, Ve'unklus Sofer came. And Unkelus himself actually accepted this opinion of the Medrash that there's no chronological order. And therefore, if you look in Unkelus, he says, L'kach tirgem dehava omar sana, for the enemy had said in the past tense, al tchilas machshav to berot fachrei, I'm referring to Paro and his original thought when he made the decision to pursue the Israelites. Ulidati b'derech hapshat, says the Rabban, I don't like this principle of Ein Muchar, Ein Mukta Muchar B'Torah. I am dedicated totally to maintain the integrity of the Torah, the chronological sequence. And therefore, Hu Sadur B'Pasuk HaRishon Mimenu, that this Pasuk is exactly positioned in its place, and it follows the Pasuk that comes before it, which says Kafu Tahomos Belev Yom, that the deep waters congealed in the heart of the sea. He says Ki Mitchila Omar Shetuvu Bayam V'Yordu Bimtzolos. At first, the pasuk tells us that the Mitzrim drowned in the sea; they descended to the very, very depths of the sea. V'Hayezek Hasher Shavu Amayim V'Yichasu Arechves Haparshim. Because now the waters returned and they covered all the chariots and the horses and the horsemen. The Acher Kach Shav Lamar, and now the pasuk goes back to tell us, Eich Nasa Zeh, how is this achieved? How is it done? And the pasuk says, Ki Beruach Apecha, Hu Ruach Kodim Aza, Nermu Hamayim Itchila V'Kofu Atomos. With the wind coming out of your nostrils, meaning the capital Y of Hashem, it's a reference to a strong east wind, which is mentioned earlier in the same perek, in the previous perek, in perek Yudalid, in Pasuk Chaf Aleph. So again, God brings the strong east wind, and the waters piled up, and the deep waters were congealed. So therefore, based on the fact that God brought this strong east wind, the enemy, the Mitzrim, thought he would be able to pursue and overtake the Israelites in the sea. In other words, it seemed that the way that the sea was split was very natural. A wind came and split the sea. And therefore, the Egyptians came to believe that it was safe for them to enter into the sea. V'yichalek shlolam, they'll be able to divide up the spoils, the booty. V'timla nafsha mehem, and they would enjoy all the benefits of the klei kesef and klei zahav. V'nashafta aleihem baruch hayom, but then God blew upon the sea with his wind. No, it's the same wind that split the sea, now blew the wind, the waters back together onto the Mitzrim. The Hizkir Zeh, and why does Moshe include this in the Shira, in the song? Ki gam b'machshavto, because even this thought of the enemy, that he thinks he can go into the sea and he has nothing to worry about. Siba upele me'es Hashem. This was a design. This was a miracle from Hashem. Shechizek libam. And God strengthened the hearts of the Egyptians, right? He hardened the hearts of the Egyptians. Vesikel atzosam lavobiyam. And he confounded their counsel, their wisdom, so that they would decide to enter into the sea. In other words, it wasn't logical for them to decide to go into the sea. Didn't they realize that the sea split on behalf of Bnei Israel? God was protecting Israel. He's bringing about these miracles. And perhaps the sea would now collapse over them. And therefore came, now we understand this pasuk, Achrav. What follows here in the next pasuk is Micha Mocha Ba'elim Oseh Gedolos V'Niflos B'Dav Rafacha. He says that now in the next pasuk in this Shira, what do Bnei Yisrael say? What do they declare? They declare Nashafta Baruchacha Kisamoyam, that same ruach, that same wind that brought the, that split the waters, now bring the waters back together. And Kisamoyam, they enshrouded the Mitzrim. Micha Mocha, Ba'il Hashem. Micha Mocha, Neder HaKodesh, Nora Sehilos Osei Fela. Who is he like you amongst the powerful, the doer of great deeds and wonders? And says the Rabban, what is the wonder that they're singing about? And that is the Dovar the Hepucho. One thing and the opposite. There's the same mechanism by which Hashem brought this wind to split the sea is going to be the very mechanism which brings the sea together to collapse onto the Mitzrim. In other words, the same phenomenon of wind that splits the waters, which is mentioned here in Pasuk Ches, right? That the Pasuk says, Beruach HaPecha Nermu Mayim, as a result of the Ruach, the wind, the breath of your nostrils, the water piled up on two sides, accomplished the exact opposite by blowing and causing the waters to enshroud the Mitzrim. So we see here in this dimension of the song, what Klal Yisrael are understanding is that there's an unbelievable Pella here. That Hashem hardens the hearts of the Mitzrim, and they are convinced that they can go down into the dry land, and they can, you know, rely on this miracle that changes all the laws of nature, that also the waters are standing up, piled up on both sides, and they can go down into the sea. That itself is a tremendous Pella. A tremendous Pella that Hashem is able to do that and take away their thinking, you know, their clear thinking. The Ramban says, Ein b'chol ha-mofsim k'pella kazeh. There's no Pella greater than this one. Sheshiga olem, it's craziness on their part to go into the dry land. Aval sikel atzosam v'chizek eslibam likanis b'yam. And Choshmu, they thought, what did the Mitzvim think? Ulai haruach sham, haruach sam hayom lecharava. Maybe the ruach has made this dry land into permanent dry land. Velo yad Hashem asasazos bavur Yisrael. Says the Rabban, the Mitzvim were convinced in their minds that it wasn't the God of Israel that was operating miraculously on behalf of the Israelites. Afal pisha ein ruach bokas yom ligzar. We've never seen in history, in nature, that a wind could split a sea into two parts. Lo samo libam gam lizos. They didn't go that far in their thinking. But rather they thought that now the wind has created dry land on a permanent basis. Bo achrayim, they went after the Jews, into the Yam. Mirov tavasam lahara lahem, because they had a tremendous desire to do evil to the Jewish people, and to fill themselves up with the wealth, the possessions that they had forked over, they forfeited. All this clouds the thinking of the Mitzrim, and people who are meant to be, you know, people of intellect, have all of a sudden made the most drastic, fatal mistake in their lives, in the life of a nation that's about to be destroyed.
It doesn't really make sense. After all of my crops I've seen,
just correct. Excellent. Excellent point, John.
You know, it's interesting. It's not an ancient Pele. It still goes on today. People try and explain Yetzir Mitzrayim by the fact that there was a strong wind that blew and made the parting in the sea. And
correct. Anyone who's an enemy of the Jewish people and wants to undermine our claim to be the chosen nation is going to come up with some sort of, you know, some sort of scientific theory to explain what happened. Or they'll just deny that it ever happened. And he says that, why is this called in the Rabban's language the Pele She'en Kamosa B'chol HaMosin? Why is it so great? And he says, because Tova HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Briya, that God not only created man with an intellect, but he also inherently put it in the inherent into man's nature, Mako Litos, that a man could, in order to fulfill his tyros, his desires, whether it's a desire to destroy his enemy or his desire to make, to take the booty, an ability to make such a fatal mistake. And that one mistake in which they, the mitzvah, said, well, this is teva, this is nature, and this ruach kadim, this eastern wind, has made a permanent change in the ground, you know, the dry ground in between these two piles of wood. That mistake is going to cost them their life, and that's the Pele, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could take man who's endowed with intellect and control him in such a way that he would make such a fatal mistake and undermine his intellect. Add to boot also the fact that the same wind was used as the force to save the Jewish people and at the same time to destroy the nations, the nation of Mitzrayim.
This is the whole question of Paro all the way through. God was hardening his heart, and it's the question of free will.
That's a different issue, which we're not going to discuss today. But
there's a problem here as well, that they were influencing their assessment, and they didn't really have a choice.
Correct. And that indicates the might of Hashem, the power of Hashem. And Hashem put into man, inherently in man's makeup, the ability to fall prey if he's only clouding his intellect and his objective ability to make a decision, to fall prey to such a mistake that's going to be fatal and that's going to bring about the destruction of that nation. So that's the second dimension of the Shiur. And finally, the third dimension of the Shira is the following. He says, there's something called Hester Panim. God is concealed. We don't see Him. The Jewish people are suffering. And now in the Shira, by the way, he points out that in Kriyat Shema, we say Shira Chadasha Shimchu Geula. What's this concept called Shira Chadasha? And Chazal say Hashem Yimloch, the declaration Hashem Yimloch, the Malchus of Hashem, that makes into a Shira Chadasha. This was the most obvious and the most profound demonstration or revelation of the sovereign control or rulership of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chazal say, Hodu v'imlichu. They crowned Hashem, they coronated Him as the King, v'yomru, and they declared Hashem yimloch li'olam v'od. That's the Shira Chadasha. What is so new about this Shira? What is so unique about the fact that Klal Yisrael are now witnessing and declaring, acknowledging the Malchus, the sovereign rulership of Hashem? And the answer, he says, to this question lies in a different question. And that is, why didn't Bnei Yisrael recite Shira as soon as they left Mitzrayim? After all, the exodus from Egypt was the culmination of all the many miracles, the Niflos and the Nisan, that took place during the Eser Makos. And not only that, after the Eser Makos, there were Rivavos Bnei Adam Rechusho, that literally hundreds of thousands of people with, together with the possessions that they take out, were able to get out of Mitzrayim. They arrived at a place called Sukkot, which is Chaf, Kuf Chaf Mil from Mitzrayim. This was all part of a miracle. And yet, they didn't recite Shira. Nasol Lehem Nes Mufla, they experienced an unbelievable miracle, Shenisu al anani akovod b'leil Pesach liyushalayim lahar hamoria lasos shom esa Pesach. This is all based on the Targum Yonasan ben Azuya, which is a collection of midrashim. That when they left Mitzrayim on that very night of Tesvav b'Nisan, on the 15th of Nisan, they were carried by these clouds from Mitzrayim all the way to the Har Moriah, and that's where they did the Pesach. The Chilo Haisa Shah Zumat Ima Lomar Shira, wasn't that the appropriate moment to recite the Shira? And the answer is because we misunderstand what Shira is, the definition of Shira. He gives a mashal, he says, imagine a symphony orchestra and the conductor has trained every one of the musicians in that orchestra to play exactly the sounds that we need to make this harmony. And all of a sudden, midway through the symphony, he hears a sound that's off. And he takes the I don't know what you call it, the stick, what's it called?
Baton.
Say it again?
Baton,
and he throws it on the ground. He is so frustrated by the fact that this one musician has undermined the entire symphony, the entire harmony. He says the following, that what is Shira? Shira is a harmony. Shira means that all the pieces, all the musical sounds fit into one perfect whole, one harmony. And therefore we can only recite Shira at the point in which we have the totality, the entire symphony, or you know, the music that they played has reached its culmination, its completion. And he says the following, that even though the period of slavery in Egypt had come to a termination, and even though they experienced and witnessed the Eser Makos, and they were carried al kanfei nesharim to Yerushalayim, nevertheless, there was still one element that was not one piece of the puzzle, one instrument in the symphony that had not played itself out. Therefore, they couldn't say Shira, because Shira requires the entire picture, the entire Kol HaRishamim, all the impacts, all the impressions, all the repercussions, all the kolot, all the different sounds. And they needed one more sound. B'shat Kriyas Yamsuf, the epitome, the completion, came at the moment of the splitting of the Red Sea. Why? T'vias Paro V'chelo B'tocho. When Paro and the nation of Egypt goes down into the sea, Nochuchu B'nei Yisrael Adas. That's when they understood Shegam b'shas Hester ponim hagadol, that even though during this long period of Shiva Mitzrayim God was concealed, nevertheless Hishgiach Hashgach Hakadosh Baruch Hashgach Pratis, God was still very much aware of every individual. Al kol tsar ukeev, God calculated, He was aware of every single suffering, every element of suffering, shall call echad v'echad b'nei Yisrael, of each member of the people. And therefore, as we saw before, Tahom Sichai Siumu, Yardim and Tzolz Kvo Oven, Rashi says that those who went down like an Evan, those who went down Kikash, those who went down Kofares, all this was based on God's calculation of how much suffering the Jewish people had experienced, how much each individual member of the nation of Egypt had inflicted a suffering and an anguish on Klal Yisrael. And therefore, milvad ha'onesh ha'klali al Mitzrayim, besides the general punishment that was meted out to the nation of Mitzrayim, Akvos Paro, Chelev Yam, there was something else. And that was the din prati. There was a justice and a judgment on every individual member of Mitzrayim. I'll call echad v'echad me'am Mitzrayim. Dodo Osam, he was judged, Kefias Han Hugusam in B'nai Yisrael, the way he treated B'nai Yisrael with the Rishoyim, who were very cruel to the people of Israel, and they suffered like cash, like the straw on the top of the waters. There were those who weren't so cruel, and they were less cruel, they went down like an Evan. And those who were the least cruel went down Kelfares. Ro B'nai Yisrael, at this moment, B'nai Yisrael all of a sudden realized what was going on over here. They became aware of the fact that there was Hashgacha Pratit, that God was aware of the suffering of every single individual member of B'nai Yisrael, Shal Kol Echad V'Echad, not only at the time of the Makos, but even during the entire period of time of the persecution of the Jewish people. Not only did God come to save his people, but even during the Shibud, the terrible, bitter Shibud, and the subjugation, the oppression, slavery, there was an absolute, meticulous, precise judgment, and every Mitzri would suffer the punishment that was fit for him. That's called a Shira Chadasha. Shimchu Giulim al Sfas Hayom. When Klal Yisrael become aware of the Hashgacha Pratis that was going on, even during the many, many decades of concealment of Hester Panim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu nevertheless was there, he was aware, he was medagdek, he was mashkiach on every tzar, every cave of every single member of Klal Yisrael. That's when it became revealed to Bnei Yisrael the midah of Hashgacha, the av of Avinu Shemayim, my Father in Heaven, for every single Jew. Then they could recite Shira. Up until that time, there was still something missing. One member of the orchestra, one musician was absent, and therefore they couldn't sing the Shira. But now that they see the entire picture, they see the Malchus of Hashem, they see the love of Hashem, they see the Hashgach of Hashem, his awareness and his intervention on behalf of Klal Yisrael, now they're ready to recite a Shira, which is a complete Shira. It's the entire symphony, the harmony, all the pieces of the puzzle fit in. It's only at the culmination of all of that that they're ready to recite Shira. So just to review the three dimensions of Shira Sayam, according to Samdera, one, that even natural events that they described were integrated into the Shira because they understood that even that is divinely inspired and ordained, and there's no difference between Ness and Teva. Even Teva itself is Ness. The second element is the great Pella that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was able to convince the Mitzrim that this phenomenon of Kriyas Yamsu was natural. There was dry land, they could certainly go in at no danger, and they made that fatal mistake. God is in control. And number three, that the Hashgacha Pratis of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is something that exists even during a period of Hester Panim. And that connects the Kriyas Yamsuf and the punishment of the Mitzrayim to everything that had happened over the course of decades and centuries to Bnei Yisrael. That was the culmination of what we call the symphony music. What's it called? What do you call the composition of a symphony orchestra? There's a word for it, isn't it? Not the song. What's it called?
The harmony.
No, but what do you call it, you know?
Symphony. Composition.
The composition. Okay, good. We'll call it a composition. I like that word. When the composition came to an end, the composition that's made up of so many different parts reaches its culmination. So he writes on that we should be zochet to learn this parasha of Shira Sayom. Well, there's so many dimensions to it and so many nuances, and we should be zochet to see all those miracles of then repeat itself now so that we again can recite a Shira.
The Hester Panim came to an end the minute Moshe Rabbeinu came back, because it wasn't Hester Panim anymore.
Correct, but what about all those years that Klal Yisrael was suffering and they were oppressed and all the anguish and came and tzar? Was Hashem watching, or was he just chas v'shalom gone? You think, for example, the Holocaust. I mean, the suffering is indescribable of the Jewish people. I mean, we don't have words for it.
But
6 million.
Was
Hashem there? You know, where was Hashem during the Holocaust, right? You've heard that question, right? And what we're saying is that Hashem is there. Again, how divine justice, you know, can be reconciled with all the suffering? That's a theological question, theodicy question that we can't answer. But whatever it is, Hashem is there. And where did Bnei Yisrael become aware of this? Where was this unbelievable illumination in the eyes of Klal Yisrael that, you know what? Hashem was aware of every single suffering. It was in that very specific punishment that was meted out to every individual mitzvah.
So that is why I say that they all became Nevi'im. Even the Shifra at Kriyat Miyatu was a Nevi'ah.
And that's what we pointed out on Sunday. You weren't here, Doc. We spoke about the Ramban who's consistent throughout his entire Perush Al Torah that the Dor HaMidbar, the generation of Israelites that went through the desert for 40 years, were on a major level. Like you say, they were Nevi'im. Even the Shivcha Aliyam saw prophets. And therefore the Rabban comes to fight, you know, and undermine that approach that Bnei Yisrael during the Midbar were on a very low level, and they, you know, they were constantly complaining and rebelling against Kal Yisrael. And he goes through consistently. Again, you have to put together about 10 different comments in the Rabban, that in each particular case the challenge was great. And it wasn't that they failed, you know, on the level of, you know, Ktari Hamuna, you know, those who... But you have to reinterpret the sin and see it in its context. What was the failure? What was the rebellion? The various ketos, you know, who said, I'm a bleak varim l'mitzrayim, otenu l'musba midbar haseh? It was that group, but there were other groups that broke out in prayer and supplication. That's what we discussed on Sunday. You'll see it, by the way, on this page that I gave out today, because, you know, the makoros for the Sunday shiur on this same page, we started today on page 2, and on Sunday we covered page 1. So, Doc, if you want to take this, you're certainly welcome to take it. And
thank you.
It's a difficult, thank you, a fantastic idea that the sea swallowing the Mitzrim was not a return to the natural state of things, but that it was another miracle.
Correct. It was
it's very hard,
the strange thing about the miracle is that miracle was brought about through the same agent that brought about the miracle to save Klal Yisrael. That's how, and the greatness of our Kodesh Baruch Hu is unlimited omnipotence, if you will, is in the power to take something that works in two opposite directions. And that's how great the power of Hashem is. And it's all included here in this Shira Sayyam that has so many different dimensions.
What's the difference between a Nes and a Pella?
A Pella means the response that we have to a Nes. The objective miracle itself is called a Nes. The Pella is the way we... what's the word I'm looking for? The way we assimilate it. You know, the human mind, you know, first the eye witnesses something, and then the brain has to assimilate it. I don't know what word to use. You know, to integrate it into a system. And that's the method by which Klal Yisrael declare the Pella. You know, the Pella is to put it into perspective.
The perception of the Ness?
Correct, the perception, the perspective on the Ness. The last topic I wanted to discuss with you was the topic of the opening line in the Shira, and that is Ashir Lashem Ki Ga'o Ga'a. And that is the end of the... of the pasuk that began with Oz Yashir Moshe Bnei Yisrael Sishir Azos Hashem V'Yom Leimor Ashir El Hashem Ki Ga'o Ga'a. What does Ki Ga'o Ga'a mean? And if you take a look in the Ramban, you'll see that he disagrees with Rashi. He first quotes Rashi and he writes Al Hashiros, you know, it's Ki Ga'o Ga'a, which would mean exalted by the songs of praise, velkomasha kales bo od yeshbo no sefos. And after all that I may laud him, there are still more praises to be said about him. Lashem Rabbein Shlomo, that's Rashi. And therefore, the Rabban summarizes Rashi in his interpretation of Ki Ga'o Ga'a Asa'o Lashon Romimus Vigodel. So Rashi understands that Ki Ga'o means an expression of the greatness of Hashem and his loftiness, his exaltedness. Ve'ulai kenhu. The Ramban doesn't deny that this is possible, and the root word Ga'o really is used as loftiness, and he actually quotes an entire series of psukim from Tanakh, from Eov, from Yechezkel, and another pasuk from Eov, in order to substantiate Rashi's pshat, support Rashi, that Loshen Godel V'Ribui, it's an expression of magnitude and increase. But V'Hanochon, the Ramban, from his perspective, Das Unklus would rather accept the opinion of Unkelus, who says, Ashir Hashem ki go ga'ah, we shall praise and give thanks to Hashem, for He has exalted Himself over the exalted, meaning over the arrogant ones. Ki nizgoa al sus shemizgoa b'milchama v'al gibor harochiv bo. Hashem exalted Himself over the horse, which in battle fills itself with pride. This may be an allusion to a pasuk in Iyov. The horse at war is described as exalting itself. And over the hero who rides it, meaning the horseman. Ki eshneim rama bayam. Both were hurled into the sea. So Hashem overwhelms those who are arrogant in battle, and thus He exalts Himself. V'chein kulam lashon geus. Now, any word that has gea as a root is similar in its meaning. Ki amizgoa yiromem atzmo memal. A person who is mizgoa, milashon gea, is an arrogant person who raises himself in his stature. And here Hashem is going to, in a sense, what word shall we use? Exalt Himself above the exalted, to overwhelm those who are arrogant. And this is a machlokas now between Rashi and the Ramban. There may be a similar kind of machlokas later on in Pasuk Yud Aleph, because Rashi there, let's just fast forward for a second to Pasuk Yud Aleph. Solu kauferes b'mayim adirim micha mocha ba'elim Hashem micha mocha nedor ba'kodesh. Rashi there says b'chazokim, and then when it says nora sehilos, let's just look at Rashi. Rashi says also a reference to those who would exalt Hashem and glorify His name. And in this case, there's a fear, Rashi says, Yiru milahagid tilosa penyimatu. And Rashi makes reference to a pasuk in Tehillim of Lecha Dumya Tehila, which is the basic pasuk that indicates that we, as human beings, mortal human beings, don't have the ability to sing the praises of Hashem, and therefore it's better that we be silent and not even begin the process. And Ibn Ezra also has a similar approach. Ki kol ha'mishallim yireim lahalal shelo, lahalal shemo. And he quotes a different pasuk in Tehillim. Ki mi yashmia kol tilosof. The Ramban, on the other hand, says, Ulefi daiti, he expresses his own opinion, kitam, the meaning of nora sehilos, feared of praises, shehu nora bisehilos, meaning he is feared through praises. Ki yase dvar noroim umishalel bohem. He does fearsome things, and things that inspire fear, and is praised through them. Sha'asa nekamos bi'ovei ritzono. He meets out punishment against those who disobey His will. Voshia bam es avadov. And through those very punishments, He saved His servants. V'hine hu bozeh nora umahulol bi'ot. Through these punishments, He's exceedingly feared and praised. Ubavurki malche eretz no roim bioshek the gaza v'nova menolos omar ki Hashem hu nora bidvar masher hu mahul bahem. Moshe says that God is feared through the very things about which He is praised. So this is the wondrous nature of God's deeds, which become evident. He produced opposite effects within the same thing, as we discussed at great length, and that's what the Ramban is saying. So there's machlokes here between Rashi and the Ramban. Rashi is focused on the praise to Hashem, and the Ramban is focused on the exalted nature of Hashem, which expresses itself also in praise. Okay, we'll stop here. Thanks.